podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock.
A camel turner.
All right. It's episode 20, season 12 of the Fighting God podcast. We've got the son that Giant Haystacks never wanted, Big John Bass.
All right.
Yeah. Well, how's being massive?
Yes, I mean, same as it always is, I guess. Just, you know, walking around, having moons in my gravitational pull.
Getting in people's way.
Yeah, just getting in people's way. That is the worst thing about, you know, there's like a big thing about like women want tall men and men look up to tall. There's some good sides to it, but it's quite annoying. Like, if you know, if you're ever somewhere busy, just imagine that there were two of you. That's what it's like. It's so annoying on the tube. It's so annoying anywhere busy.
John, have you, bump into you. What's your cock to body ratio? Is it fair?
It would be like the equivalent of a fucking Sherman tank, and instead of that big cannon, just a little pin, like a little tack. That's it. That's my dick on the top of my body.
And David Alfie Ward has one massive ball.
Exactly.
It is massive.
Are you still dealing with that, Dave?
It's there. It's for the rest of my life. Do you know it's been giving me some pain lately, and I might go to the doctor about it.
Oh, come on. Don't. Why did you bring that? Because now we can't make a joke about that.
Bruv, you brought in my ball, and I'm like, do you know what? Actually, I'm in a forum here with two of my boys, and I can be honest about it. It's not like no one else is listening.
Yeah, we're supposed to have a bit of a laugh. You're so, saying there's pain in it. You better go and get that checked out. Everyone out there, check their prostate, quick.
Yeah.
No, the prostate is not the same thing, is it?
I don't know.
Why are you telling people to finger their arseholes?
It's more or less the same, Dave. It's like the ball, the arsehole, it's all connected. So
check it all.
Just a quick one. The Fighting Cock Christmas jumpers are back. You can find some of them right now by going to thefightingcock.co.uk/shop. You know, we've got Xmas jumpers there. Brilliant. Like buy them because it's fucking Christmas, isn't it? We design more as we speak. At the moment, there's some of the ones from last year, but we've got about four or five coming out, so you can get hold of them. And going forward, we're going to be a merch engine. We're going to make as much money as fucking possible. Like, buy great merch and support the Fighting Cock. And you can do that throughout the rest of forever because it's always going to be there. Thefightingcock.co.uk/shop. Boys, isn't it mental that that a single win in the Premier League can change your mood completely? Because after the Forest, I was like, fuck this, fuck the club, fuck everything. I'm not having it anymore. I'm done with it. Dave, how good is it just to win a game in the Premier League?
It feels really good. I think it feels even better because it looked like for so many parts of that game we wasn't going to win it. So then you start at 3-2. I thought that's it, that we're done. And so I'm there in a stadium, and I brought this American guy because he works for the US Air Force. Because you know. He works with planes, so I brought him with me.
Yeah, you love planes.
And I love planes. And he was like, I work for the US Air Force. I was like, I'll get you anything you want. And he said, Tottenham tickets.
grooming someone from the US Air Force to get what he wants out of him. The plane nonce knows no bounds.
That's some fucking, that's some self-respect.
I have no self-respect. He told me he could get me near an F-15, and I was like, whatever you want, man. You know, whatever. And he was like, just take me to Tottenham. I've chose Tottenham to support. So I took this guy at 3-2. I'm like, yeah. And you start to think, like, okay, we've lost. And then you try and, like, reason with it. You're like, well, at least, you know, we've got the break now, and we'll be fourth still. And then we win. We come back, we score two goals in 3 minutes, and you're like,
beautiful.
Yeah, I fucking love this club. And this is... You know, and it just changes your mood. And you could tell, like, Spurs, White Lane has been a bit toxic. lately, to say the least. And just that mood lift of everyone going, all right, okay, we've got through that. We got through it. We've got the 3 points. Let's have the break. And it was just like completely different atmosphere.
It's like you know, when you have a international break and you don't want to lose that game because it's 2 weeks before you play next time. Now there's 6 weeks before we play another game. And we managed to win, John. And it was just like a very sort of satisfying feeling once the final whistle went. And as much as there were moments where we found like we could possibly lose this game and that we weren't on top and they pegged us back, I didn't feel like it was really in doubt. It kind of felt the most comfortable 4-3 win that I've ever experienced.
Yeah, it was exactly what we needed. I mean, you touched on it there about, you know, normally like when you go into an international break and people kind of know it's coming and it's a bit of a good way to go into that break. I think people have been saying for a good few weeks now, you know, we just need to get to the World Cup, especially for us, right? I think we all know that we've got a lot of important players for their international teams. And, you know, momentum's been a bit of an issue for us. It's been a bit stutter in terms of second half Tottenham Hotspur and all this kind of narrative that's going around it. And I think this is exactly what we were hoping for, is that we'd just go into the World Cup off the back of not just a win, but like a good performance. And I think actually we saw a really good attack, loads of goals, which is what I'm all about. I'm all for 4-3s, by the way. Bring them on, more of them, please. So I think that's exactly what we needed, just from a like feel good perspective, to go into the World Cup off the back of a win.
Dave, you ever heard of XG Philosophy, a Twitter account? So it's just, all it does is just throw up sort of mental XG stats that some people believe in and some people don't. I'm actually a proponent for XG. I really like it. But I don't know if you've seen this. The most XG, which means the goals that we should have scored based on our attacking prowess. Arsenal have 29.6 goals thus far. Man City have 29+16, and Tottenham have 27.36. And this is a Tottenham team that doesn't attack. If we can score, there's also like a couple of like stats flying around, like we've. Only Bayern Munich have scored more goals than Tottenham in Europe since Conte took over. Only Tottenham have scored the most goals in the Premier League. And this is a team, and this is something that gets like thrown at us all the time, is that we're so defensive-minded and it's boring. But we're scoring goals for fun, Dave. Do you take anything from that at all, or do you just think it's all a load of bollocks?
No, I take a lot from that. I mean, I'm selective of XG. When it works in my favour, I'm like, yeah, I'm all for it. And then when like Arsenal fans are throwing around XG, I'm like, it doesn't fucking count.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Weirdos.
Yeah, you're a weird, you're just working on stats. But with that, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's been tough. Listen, let's not beat around the bushes. It's not been tough the last few weeks with Kulu out, Son out or off form, and Richarlison out. Like, it's been tough going forward. It's felt stagnant and just like stuck in the mud. But when we've got those players fit and firing, like the back end of last season and, you know, some points this season, I've never really bought into this narrative that the pundits and other fans were, well, Tottenham are boring to watch. It's basically Mourinho. It's not, you know, because there is obviously a plan there. And let's face it, at the beginning of the season, we could be like, oh yeah, but at least we're hard to break down. And that's gone out the window now. Yeah. So we're like, well, you know, we're not that hard to break down as it seems. So we better just start attacking. And like John's, it'd be 4-3 every week, which isn't good for my heart. Like, it's not good. It's aging me. My resting heart rate was like double than it usually is. And I'm like, fuck.
What,
this
you got
club,
a Fitbit
man.
On? You got a Fitbit on?
I got an Apple Watch in it. You know, gone up in the world.
Did you genuinely look at your heart rate during the game? I'm genuinely curious, because do you see like a dramatic rise in your heart rate when in these tight games? John, have you ever worn a Fitbit?
I've got an Apple Watch. So same as Dave. I have checked it watching football, and it definitely does go up. Mainly though, because I've had it on watching at home when I've jumped off my sofa, started shouting and calling everyone a cunt.
Yeah.
That's when it tends to go through the roof, typically. But just on the XG thing, one thing I would say, so I wouldn't say I'm a complete stats hater, and I wouldn't say I'm like a stats nonce. I'd probably say I'm like a creepy stats uncle. No, someone who gets a bit too friendly at Christmas after a couple of sherries.
Fingers his
so
cousin.
I kind of, yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, yeah.
Have you?
So for me, it's a case of like, I like XG as an idea, as a concept. Like, I think it's interesting to kind of see it, but fundamentally it comes down to actually the end result, which is goals and performances. I do think we haven't played particularly attractive football. Like, scoring a lot of goals doesn't necessarily mean that it's like good to watch. I think you'd struggle to find a Spurs fan who's like, the style of football we play is amazing. Like, it's really good football. The fact we're scoring a lot of goals, though, I do think means that if we haven't played well and we're still scoring a lot of goals, and this was kind of what I was advocating for after the Liverpool performance, which the second half was really good. It's like, if we can just get this together and find a way to find a balance of what Conte wants to control games, and we're still putting up these sort of numbers, then it will be good to watch, because we have seen moments like in this game where we just were blowing people away and like our attacking football was exciting. So I think basically it is there for us. It's just that we haven't quite seen the attacking football to go along with the goals.
Dave, did you? I mean, we lost you for a second there, but have you checked your Apple Watch or your Fitbit during?
No, I don't. I'm not purposely checked going into it. So the face that I've chosen always has my heart rate there. So right. It's just when I look at the time,
but does it go up?
So my resting heart rate is around 60 because I'm a picture of health. No? Which is not.
I'm surprised.
Why are you laughing?
No, I'm surprised. I would say if I had to guess about your resting heart rate, looking at you, I'd say sort of high 80s.
Yeah, no, I got it down to 55 recently. I thought I was dying.
Jeez.
And I was like, nah, I'm dying.
Mate,
like,
mine's not much better, to be fair.
But obviously, the lower it is, the better it is. So about 60, 65. Good and it you. Was at 1:33 watching Spurs in a day.
Jesus Christ.
UK garage. UK garage.
So I was like, what is going on here? But yeah, but John's right. I felt all season, though, it's never clicked. I was saying to me and Tony D become very good friends. And we were saying the other day, like, it's not clicked once. It's not clicked. And then, well, there was a game that for half of it, made it looked like it had clicked. And Tony was like, it's clicked. And obviously it hadn't. It was just a bit of fucking arthritis or something. But it was just... what I was waiting for with Spurs is it's going to click, like John said, and it's going to just all come together. And we're going to be amazing. Or we're going to get found out and we're going to lose a few games on the trot and quite convincingly lose them. I thought it's either going to go one way or the other. It will click or we'll get spanked. And I wouldn't say we've been spanked. I mean...
We've got being convincingly beat by teams that we need to be competing with, I think.
Yeah, 100%. And that's because it hasn't clicked. And, you know, when the basics aren't working, we haven't really got much else to fall back on. And that needs to be addressed.
Hasn't clicked, but we are currently fourth in the league, in Champions League places, last 16. And we perform well against Leeds. We're going to go into the Leeds game as well. And on the show this week, we're discussing who is better of the two, Kulusevski or Bentancur, the treatment of Emerson Royale, bumming off Levy, and who is our pound-for-pound left-back since Danny Rose left Spurs. Before we do that, we have to tell you about the fact that we're once again backed by the lovely folks from NordVPN. The Times, just this week, have included NordVPN as one of the best inventions in 2022. So we're not... like often when people listen to podcasts, they think, they're just selling this because... they're paying the money and being honest, that is the reason why we're talking about it right now. But it's a genuinely good product. And the Times say so themselves. For the price of a London pint, you can protect yourself from anyone trying to get into your computer. You can use it to pay for things like Netflix and YouTube Premium for much cheaper than you'll pay in the UK. Just fucking log into a Venezuelan server, sign up to YouTube Premium or Netflix and pay £1 a month as opposed to £12 a month, or whatever it is that you have to pay. And, you know, in times where cost of living is significant and people still want to enjoy themselves and watch movies and whatnot, that you can use NordVPN to pay much cheaper prices. For all the dads out there who, the internet is locked down and you've got parental controls, you can't access the spicy websites, the gambling websites, all the best bits of the internet are not available to you because... at one stage, you chose to blow your beans up some... doesn't
lovely
matter.
Lovely lady.
Lovely lady. Now you can't watch what you want to watch because of that. Use NordVPN to get around those parental locks. Do you know what I mean?
Just don't come in a bird. Or if you do,
use NordVPN. You can grab your exclusive.
These are literally the only two options. I don't know if there's any other options out there.
Well, I think NordVPN gives you can get your whole cake and eat it. So grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/thefightingcock to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, including 4 months free if you pay for a year up front. It's completely risk-free. You get a 30-day money-back guarantee.
Just quickly, you know that like NordVPN, us doing the NordVPN reads in itself is almost becoming a meme now. Like I saw someone the other day saying, the problem with Emerson Royale, he's a good defender, but when he goes forward, he needs to invest in NordVPN so he can help him cross better. Yeah.
And that's exactly what it is. If you're getting up to horrible stuff, if doing all the good stuff, like during the day, like eating a packed lunch, having a salad at lunch, or getting back, giving your kiss, your missus a kiss on the face, you're doing all the good stuff up until the point where it's the business end where you're lying in bed and she wants you to make sweet love to her. And you can't because you've taken too many lines of gear or whatever it might be.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was a good analogy. That works in some kind of way.
That's coherent.
Basically,
NordVPN just does it all.
Emerson Royale is the bloke who takes his wife for a romantic meal, but does it a line of gear in the toilet before going home. That's Emerson Royale. I don't know. This is
if Emerson Royale's dad had NordVPN, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. And I'm just saying, it would have saved us from all them terrible first touches and passes. So if you invest in NordVPN, maybe
Emerson Royale would never exist.
Yes, 100%. And listen, we can't guarantee that, but it's a possibility.
We're going to come on to the treatment of Emerson Royale shortly, but to get involved with NordVPN and support the Fighting Cock. It is a really, really good product, and you're also helping the podcast. NordVPN.com/thefightingcock. We've got a question here from Spurs Family. And he says, can you name a better multi-buy than Bentancur and Kulusevski? John, like the pair of them are insane. It's unreal. The fact that we've got them for both, for sub 50 million, even 60 million, if you're including the add-ons, is unreal.
Yeah, looking back on it now, it's an absolute joke, because the problem we've got, though, now is that it's just going to make it even harder to try and sign players, because we're constantly going to look at that and just think, like, how do you actually get that value for money again? I think that was I don't want to say once in a lifetime, but like a one-time opportunity to pull something out the bag where two kind of, you know, fairly well-rated but underperforming maybe talents playing for a big club where expectations are super high. They're nowhere near even the beginning of their journey to hitting their ceiling. And all the stars align, right? Paratici joins us. We've got Conte. We need to kind of sign some players who are, you know, of a certain level. All the stars aligned, basically, for us to be able to pull that off. And at first, I think people were like, oh, wow, Kulusevski, you know, if you get one out of these two, that's amazing. And now I think this season, it's not that Kulusevski's like dropped off. He's obviously staying at a level which is incredible. It's that Bentancur's just got better. He's like really, really has this year. I think everyone thought he was neat and tidy and just like solid, decent signing, but eventually we'd need to upgrade him. Turning into like one of the best midfielders in the league, like genuinely a proper player. So yeah, mate, super exciting. I don't know how we follow that, really.
Dave, who's the better signing, Bentancur or Kulusevski?
They're both like.
Don't want to hear that. I want to hear your opinion.
Do you remember when John Lewis was like made a mistake and they were selling air fryers for like £5? And everyone went mad.
No,
that's exactly what it is. Everyone was like, oh my God, air fryers, £5. And then John Lewis was like, oh, we made a mistake. We've all sold out. Fuck off, John Lewis. You said it was a fiver on the website. And that's what we did to Juventus. We went there and we went, you said it was a fiver on the website. Now give us a fucking Kulusevski. Yeah? And they went, no. And I went, fucking yeah.
Dave,
cooking chicken wings in that later.
Did you get caught up?
Yeah, I ordered one. I ordered one and they said that they were out of stock and I was fuming. Because I already saw it on eBay. They're like £250. And I was like, fiver, I ordered one. you know, because, you know, five is a lot of money. I could have done two, but I was like, let's not push the boat out. And then I was
imagine
like,
two.
Already I'm thinking just Facebook Marketplace.
Can't I'm even thinking, use two.
Bang, bang, get this down, your teeth fell, fuck off. Yeah, and then that's exactly what we did. John Lewis, but then it's like Juventus turned around and gone, oh shit, actually, those players, like, you know, because there's part of me, because obviously Kulu is not signed, one of them's not signed permanently yet, right?
It's no, Bentancur's signed permanently, but Kulusevski's...
Yeah, so Kulu hasn't. So there's a part of me that's like, they're going to John Lewis us, innit? And they're going to be like, ah, actually, there's a clause in that one, you know?
Well, if, you, next if, thing you know, if you're Juventus, you surely have to be looking at every opportunity to get this geezer back. I know they can't. I know Conte's come out on record saying that he's a Spurs player, it's just formalities and structure of the deal, and he, you know, it's only a matter of time. Same way with Romero from Atalanta. But Juventus have got to go, can we get some lawyers on this? We get John, like, can we get some lawyers? Like, can we stop? Because he's, it's just showed you how reliant any team is on quality players. You can't lose a player as good as Kulusevski and maintain the form and fluidity that we had before he was injured. He's come back into the side. Second half against Liverpool, we were sensational. Really, really good. This game against Leeds, fantastic as well. I thought, like, you know, we had defensive frailties, which we are going to have with our back line. But having that balance of Richarlison, Kane and Kulusevski, and players that are playing in the correct position. Kulusevski was unreal. Absolutely unreal. Like, we have pulled their pants down with both of those players.
Yeah, they're worth now mega, mega money. And particularly as, like, we got them still around sort of off the back of, like, COVID world where transfer fees had, like, gone down, essentially. And so now, like, that's going away again. So, like, their value's, like, naturally gone up anyway because we're not in COVID conditions anymore. And also their performances are through the roof. I mean, Kulu normally... players who are injured take a little bit of time to adjust. He's just come back in like an absolute machine. Mm. It's like he's not been injured. He's just been. He was so, so good in that game. Yeah, two incredible signings.
It's hard to decide which one. You know, the question was which is the best signing, and it's very hard because they do very different roles. And John hit the nail on the head when we last season and beginning of this season when we. I've always liked Bentancur. I've never hated him because I thought he's a good option for what we had before. I didn't see the ceiling being as high as it is showing to be and potentially go higher. But Kulu is like 22 years old. Like, just how much we missed him when he came on for 20 minutes against Liverpool completely changed the game. You know, if Dier doesn't fuck up and it's 1-1, then we win that game. And that's because of Kulu. And because he's that quality. I was saying to somebody the other day, I was watching in Manchester actually. And I said, he should be spoken about in the same breath as Phil Foden because they're the same age. He's that good.
It's crazy,
and people just laughed at me.
Statistically, you know what I mean? this season's well, actually, since he joined, no, actually, no, it's calendar year. I think he's statistically, in terms of carries and passes into the box, the fourth best forward in Europe, and Foden isn't in that list.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. But Foden, obviously, maybe because he's English and we're in England, is spoken to, and Foden, listen, is a brilliant footballer. I'm not saying he's not because he's wonderful, but Kulu being the same age, I think they're a month apart, is as good if not better at this stage. But you know, he's not a star boy. He went, you know, he was a quote unquote flop at Juventus, and now he's just at Spurs, and we've got two gems. And yeah, man,
we've got a question here from Patricio Fern. It says, who do you think is more important, Deki, Bentancur, or Højbjerg, John?
More important, I think we've seen that without Kulusevski, I'm assuming it's based on like right now, not that we like not looking in the future. Right now, when he's been out of the team, we have basically not been able to perform to anywhere near the level we're capable of. As soon as he's in the team, we suddenly look like we will score four goals every game. So I think based on that, it's not, and this is not a slight on the other two, because I think they are also very important, but there have been games or moments when they've not been there, and we've, you know, as long as Kulu's there, I think we're able to create. So I would probably go for Kulu.
I think.
Why do people call him Deki? Can I just ask that? I know that's his official nickname, but
yeah, that's what
he's. Can we get in the bin with Deki? There's no D in his name anywhere.
Yeah, but that's what he's asked to say. That's what he said. Can I? Can this is how people refer to me? Is this about your like pronouns? Is that you're angry about pronouns?
No, I'm saying if you can make up your nickname based on nothing to do with yourself, I want you to call me Lord Legend then. Well, why? So my name's John Basso. It makes sense. Makes no sense.
You know your nickname's El Gigante.
El Gigante, exactly. Right, now you have to call me El Gigante.
Oh, well, I'd love to.
I like El Gigante. It's good.
My real middle name's not Alfie. It's a nickname. And that's there's no logic to that.
One ball.
I told a girl that was a womanizer when I was about 18, and then they called me Alfie as a joke because I wasn't a womanizer. I wasn't. It was sarcasm.
It was a joke.
If we call him Small John Bass, it's like that. Yeah.
So you're
we'll call you Alfie.
Your middle name's not.
It's Martin. It's Martin.
Of course it's mine.
Yeah.
Martin Warren.
You think, bruv, you think I'd get any bookings if I went in and I was like, yeah, I'm an actor, comedian, podcaster, voiceover called David Martin Ward? They'd be like, get this tinker away from me. Listen, I'm David Martin Ward. I've been playing to a tree or all, now I'll spend my life. That's David Martin Ward. This is David Alfie Ward.
Dave's allowed to do that joke. We're not allowed to laugh at it.
Yeah, don't laugh. I'm allowed to call myself a pikey mug. And if you laugh, any of you laughing right now, you're a racist.
Yeah. So we'll,
good. You can meet me at the scrap pile.
We'll move on from all of that.
Sure.
But the performance was much better than what we got used to, John, wasn't it? Because while they scored 3 goals and we have been a little bit porous this season, it was so much more expansive than we'd seen it in previous games. The last couple of months, it has been, you can't deny it. As much as we want Conte to do well, and he has done well, and we're going to come onto that to discuss that. But it felt like in this game to me is that even when we conceded the lead 3 times, or went behind 3 times, rather, I still felt like this was our game. It felt like there was an air of inevitability that Tottenham Hotspur were going to win this game against Leeds.
Yeah,
is that fair?
I said, yeah, I think so. Because I said basically after the Liverpool game to T that I basically hope we concede first now in every game. Because when we
do
go
down
in
these games...
First? I mean, wasn't it like 8 games or something we've conceded the first goal? Something mad like that.
I can't remember the last time we won 1-0 up.
It's weird.
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, Dave? I can't remember.
Dave, do you know?
I'm trying to think. No.
No.
No, it's weird. So I kind of thought, do you know what? I'm just going to embrace this because I've been critical of the football under Conte and like enjoying it for that reason. But after that Liverpool game, like I said before... But something just changed. Like I think the players were like, actually, do you know what? Fuck, we need to score, so we're just gonna be let loose. And it wasn't like chaos. It felt like Conte was in charge of the way we were playing. And I do feel like going into this game, again, we conceded first and conceded fairly early, so maybe he didn't have a choice. But it did, again, it did seem like this was very... It was a bit different. It felt like, actually, okay, fine. We know we can get results when we have to push forward this way. And so there was a bit more... confidence, I think, of us being able to just get back in. And when we were conceding, it was like, but we are creating a shitload of chances, which is, to your point earlier about the kind of XG stuff. So, well, yeah, because I feel like we're always creating quite a lot of chances. And this game was no different. So I did feel like, yeah, we're going to score goals. And it just so happened that we managed to get enough to win the game.
Got a question here from Ben Forman. He says, why do I feel less happy about the win and more angry about... the fact that we were put in a position that we had to claw ourselves back to winning the game from a losing position. Dave, do you find, are you frustrated that we keep finding ourselves in a position we have to move heaven and earth to win a game or get a point?
Yeah, I just looked and it was 8 games ago against Everton that we went ahead. We won 2-0. That's a penalty half-time. So... that says it all. Everton are fucking cack. Do you mean like let's not beat around the bush? And we struggled that first half. We got a penalty late on, and we didn't look like scoring much really too much before that. So yeah, it's fucking frustrating that we can't just go ahead and look in control. But you know, it's the Tottenham way. Like I said, I brought this American dude, and that 90 minutes against Leeds, I was like, you know, me and the boys went to Beavertown afterwards, and we were saying, if that doesn't sum up supporting Spurs in 90 minutes, you know, that's what we signed up for. It's chaotic. Sometimes it's chaos with a bit of kind of nous about it, but it's maybe I want to be this team that goes 1-0 up and just kind of can see it out. But where's the fun in that?
I know. You're right, and there's a happy medium between sort of going ahead and you know, just sort of trampling a game out, winning 1-0, 2, and being functional and being chaotic, which is the Spurs that we've grown up with. The problem is that despite, regardless of what we seem to do, whether it's gung-ho football under, you know, Pochettino, and you know, with an element of an idea about how we approach the game, you know, we're looking to dominate and create attacking opportunities. That's the forefront of our game. To what we've had under Jose Mourinho and Conte, and in a small part Nuno, where it is a more defensive outlook and looking to just win games 1-1 or 2-0. But somewhere in the middle, there is what Spurs fans want, and it isn't necessarily trophies. It's just, let's just watch a game that's entertaining. And I don't know where I am really currently. We're going to talk about Conte's contract shortly, because there's been movement on it. But before that, we need to talk about the treatment of Emerson Royal. This is a player of our own. You know, he plays for Spurs. He does his best, or he sometimes doesn't do his best. He sometimes fucks up completely. But the booing or jeering around him this weekend made it. I felt very uncomfortable about it, John. Do you just think fuck him?
Fucking fuck off. I spoke about this last pod I was on about the booing. And for me, it's a case of, look, if you want to boo, you pay your money, do what you want. It's the one form of expression that the fans have control over, like the club. The club can do all this shit. They can put prices up. They can fucking do mad stuff with the ground. They can charge loads of money for drink, all that shit. The only thing we really can do in terms of like fan action is actually fucking boo. That's pretty much it, right? We've seen outside stadiums trying to do banners and all that shit. For whatever reason, we're not like Liverpool fucking weirdos that can form like Voltron and just fucking cause chaos outside the ground. It's just not who we are. So really, the only form of showing discontent in any way is to do something inside the ground. And we've actually seen that work before in terms of like managers we didn't like. Nuno, I think, was a prime example of that, right? So I personally have got no problem with it. I've never done it, that being said. And I'm sort of uncomfortable with the idea that I would probably ever do it, because I kind of believe in more positivity being a better use of my energy inside the stadium. That being said, directed at a particular player, I think he's bang out of order. And the reason that I think it's bang out of order is he's not thrown the shirt, he's not spat at a fan, he's not said Tottenham are the shittest club he's ever played for. He's done nothing to like offend us as a club, as a fan base. He's just not playing very well. If you think booing an individual, a person who's trying their hardest, very obviously trying their hardest as well. It's not like some players who look like they don't give a shit. He very clearly cares and is trying to play well. He's playing badly. If you're booing him, you're a bully. It's not a good look to treat an individual player like that for doing nothing else than just trying to play the best he can and failing. That is mental, in my opinion. It's really not a good look for us.
If you haven't sung a single song or got behind the players, and the only sort of noise you make inside the stadium is to boo Emerson Royal, then you're as bad as Emerson Royal. As a fan, you're as bad as Emerson Royal's performance. If your only input vocally during the game is to boo Emerson Royal or jeer him when he's made another poor pass or shot from over, you know, from 10 yards out over the bar, if your only input to the atmosphere is to boo him as he comes off, then you're as bad as he is in terms of your performance. You're adding nothing but negativity. I don't know if you saw, Dave, that he tweeted after the game that he loved the support he received after being subbed off. Do you think, I don't know if you saw that, but he tweeted saying, oh, it was a great reception after I got sent off. Do you think that he's Some people say, oh, he's not aware. He doesn't know what's going on. Of course he's aware. He's a fucking functioning human being. He can stand upright and breathe. Therefore, he's going to know, he can read the room. Do you think that the jeering and booing of him is going to help anything at all? Or
I don't understand where people are getting off there. Like John hit the nail on the head. Like what do people expect to come from that? I don't like, what is your end goal there, apart from deteriorating a man's confidence and mental health? You know, because that's what you're doing. If he is aware of it,
could have a huge impact on his mental health, probably.
100%. Like, and he's not good enough. I don't think he's good enough. But there's this new booing culture at Spurs, and probably in modern football, it probably comes from this Twitter, you know, the Water Trophy, this kind of new brigade of, you know, what's he ever won? Kane's not a good footballer because he's never won anything. It's that mentality that's seeping into football stadiums. And then you get people booing individuals, and it's not fucking acceptable. I mean, he's not good enough, and I don't like to see his name on the team sheet. I can't defend him anymore as a player, but I can defend him as a human, because like John said, he tries his hardest. I just don't understand.
No, I agree.
What they think they're doing. And people try to justify it by the ticket prices. Again, nothing to do with the individual. That has nothing to do with him.
Yeah.
So you're paying whatever it is, 70 quid, you know, per game.
Doesn't mean you can act like an arsehole.
Yes, exactly. Doesn't mean that
you... We all get it. You're not educating anybody by booing Emerson Royale or jeering him as he goes off. We understand his limitations. We understand that, you know, we probably shouldn't have paid 23, 24 million pounds or whatever we paid for him. We understand that there is aspects to his foreplay that is completely below what we expect from our right wing backs or forward thinking players as they get onto that front foot. We understand it. You're not educating anybody by like making his life fucking in that moment hell. Like imagine you doing your job and your boss, you're doing your best and you're a brickie or whatever it might be, and you just slightly mislined a wall, and your boss has gone, you're shit. You're not only you're shit, the entire workforce around you are going to boo everything you do.
To be honest, Flav, I'm probably the only person in this room that can actually relate to being booed at work, and I'm just trying my best, man. I've never been booed
on the stage. What's that feeling like, Dave? When you're dying,
it's fucking horrible. It's really. You ever had like bad news, like the crush at school? You found out she's dating another boy or whatever, and it's kind of that sinking, horrible. You kind of blood drains from you. Yeah, you got that for 20 minutes, bro. You got that, and you get off, and then, you know, it's funny to see. When your friends are dying, it's fucking funny, because you know they're good comics, right? And that's the funniest thing. But when you're dying, it's every bit of everyone's anxiety dreams they have about dying on stage, is that's what it is.
So it's like Eric Dyer laughing at Emerson Royale as he is jeered off. Is that...
Yeah, 100%. You know, but I suppose... It's a bit different. If Eric Dyer knew that Emerson Royale was a good player and he's just having a stinker, then he can laugh. But now it's get to the point where if I was dying every week and other comics are laughing at me, that's just hurting me, you know? But it's horrible. Like, it must be really horrible for the guy. And listen, I don't, you know, I want to see him move on.
But that's fine. Like, and the club will make that decision. But we're not going to escalate that by fucking throwing the geezer under the bus. Just let him be. I mean, if Conte thinks he should be playing, then that's like boo. If anyone needs to get your vitriol, then it'd be Conte. But you won't do that because you know Conte's decent. You know he's good. He's good for the club, and you will target Emerson Royale because in that moment he seems like the best player to get it. But he hasn't behaved like Hossam Ghali did when he threw the shirt.
Yeah.
That's complete. That those are the differences. This is a guy who's doing his all. If he's not good enough, then it's on Conte not to play him. But if he's on the pitch and he's selected, then you need to get behind him.
And it's, again, the Twitter thing. Like, I've seen, I don't know their age, but people are, like, the generous consensus. He's the worst player Spurs ever had. Bro, you ever see Chris Perry or Noel Paramo or any of these cats? Do you mean, like,
he's the
worst player Spurs have ever had? Yeah, and it's nonsense. Just like, well, then straight away you know nothing. You're an idiot. You're an idiot.
He's definitely not the worst player we've ever seen, although he needs a good couple of performances, doesn't he, John?
He does. Just quickly, just the elephant in the room. I know as a fan base and all football fan bases that we will do exactly what we've said to not do to Emerson to opposing players. So in other words, like, we will fucking mercilessly boo and call opposition players all sorts of shit under the sun. And the reason I think that there's a nuance to that is because almost like wrestling, right? They're expecting that.
Yeah.
Right? You go as a player to an away ground, you are going to get shit from the other fans. Mm-hmm. The reason this is different is the one sacred thing is that they are our own. In the same way as we defend some of our fan base do fucking mad shit. And, you know, if I saw them taking a shoe in, I'd step in because I'm like, well, they're part of the same collective we're part of. So we have to sort of stick up for our own. And that's sort of an unwritten rule. You just don't sort of dig on your own. You can say it privately and quietly and have opinions on who should start and who shouldn't, but you're supposed to defend them. So us getting turning on our own players is proper fucking weird behaviour.
Yes.
And very odd.
A lack of
that
backbone.
Being said, massive lack of backbone, just a really weird thing to do. That being said, I have been banging the fucking Spence drum based on absolutely nothing other than he's not Emerson and not Doherty. And I'm still on that fucking bandwagon because he must be decent to have like been signed by us in the first place. Conte wanted him or otherwise. He's obviously a talented young player. Anytime he's come on, in literally probably a combined total of about 37 and a half minutes, he has looked much better than both of them in terms of going forward. So I just want to see him fucking play games. And the easiest way to take this Royale situation out is just not fucking play him for a while. And I'm also not advocating to completely bomb him out of the squad and get rid of him at the first like moment for undervalue. But I just don't see it. It's getting to the point now where us talking about this topic is not going to make the people who booed him change their mind. Right, they're just not going to go, they're right.
They're not listening, really.
Yeah, El Gigante said, well, I better stop booing him, so I better stop booing him. They're not going to do it. So it's going to happen. And at this point, it's like, if he was... I mean, I don't know why they'd be booing if he was playing like Cafu. But if he was playing like Cafu and he was getting mercilessly booed by his own fans, fine, Conte, that's your job to win football matches. He's not playing well and he must be able to see that. So even if it's Doherty, which I still think is also just mad when Spence is clearly like a really exciting attacking right wing back and that's exactly what we need, he's got to take Royale out. He's got to. It would be borderline cruel to keep him in, I think, at this point. And hopefully after the World Cup, a lot's forgotten and we'll see what happens.
What happens if you bring Spence in and he you know, creates two or manages to fuck up twice to concede goals? Because he's playing in a higher jeopardy area where his mistakes force us to have to defend significantly. We all know he's good running forward. We all know that what we've seen thus far and what he's done at Forest last season, that he carries the ball well and he's exciting. Get it? I understand completely. But that's one third of his game. The most important part of his game would be what can he do in terms of the shape, ensuring defensive stability and pressure and performing under pressure. We don't know any of those bits. All we see as Spurs fans is how good he is running forward. And that, as a right wing back, is important, but it's not the be-all and end-all. And Conte must see that. And I get it. I'd love to see Spence come in. I'd love to see him do well. My fear is that he will come in and he won't do as well as people think.
And if sorry, mate. Sorry to cut you. But on that exact point, because I think this is really important, is I wouldn't even have been against Royale starting all the games that he started. But the amount of games where we are 1-0 down, 2-1 down, where we need to score, and you are keeping a right wing back who we all know, including Conte, is not great at going forward, that's just like borderline incompetence. Like, okay. I just cannot, or at least stubbornness. And if you've got a right wing back you don't trust him defensively, then fine, that's fine. Bring him on for 30 minutes, 45 minutes when we need to score. I get that. But to never play him all season and to then not even start him in the League Cup is madness to me. And that has properly pissed me off. This is my biggest bugbear with Conte is the treatment of Spence. I think it's been like such a weird scenario that hopefully will get corrected one way or another after the World Cup.
Sounds like you want him out.
No, I want him in. I just want him to stop being weird about Spence.
It's been a year since Conte took over at Tottenham. Dave, what are your feelings about the job that he's done thus far?
Positive. I think this. I don't know how Spurs fans can. You can sit there and have that question put to you and be like, "Oh no, it's not been great," because he got us top four last season when there's no way in hell that team should have got top four, right? He done a miracle doing that. We're in the last 16 of the Champions League. We're in top four going into this weird international break for 6 weeks that will probably, in fact, do us a world of good. You know, there's some talk. Listen, it's not all sunshine and rainbows, but this is the only time we've ever had an elite manager that's been there and done it and won leagues. You know, won the Premier League, won Serie A, and after a year, people are willing to. I'm not saying they're calling for his head. I'm sure some people are, but some people are morons. But people are willing to step aside while the mob come through to get his head. You know?
Yeah.
Nah, not for me. Like, stick by him. Listen, at the end of the season, it's a weird season as it is. Like, he's out of contract at the end of the season. It's a weird season with a break. But you can't sit there realistically and be like, I'm fucking not happy with when you look where we are at paper and where the playing squad is as well. Like, it's, you know.
What? So he mentioned last week about him. He'll only sign a new contract if he feels he deserves it, which is a seismic shift from where he was last season, where he was talking about, you know, Spurs have to match my ambition. I think now he realizes that his performance as a manager hasn't been up to scratch, and that's a great thing to hear, to my ears at least. When he said that I'll only sign a new contract if I deserve one, would suggest to me that he understands at times this season he's underperformed and the team hasn't performed under him. And if you look at the amount of games where he haven't performed, you have to look at the manager. That's not to say we don't want him in there. We do. Like, the teams go fucking Arteta. Arsenal finished eighth and fifth under Arteta, and now look at them. So there is this situation where we have to ask the question, John. Is will he sign a new contract? And if he does, are you encouraged by the future?
Yeah, I think he will. And I think your interpretation of what he said is correct. That I think he basically sets a really, really high standard for himself. And in the main, he's done really well. But he would consider that unless he's winning, he's still got work. And I think he will basically kind of take stock of the progress that's being made. And if he feels that he's able to continue to add something and deliver something, then he will sign the contract. I think he has done really well, and I would like to see him sign the contract, because I do think we still have the same players making the same mistakes, costing us in the same way. Being critical of the way we've played, but you can only judge him on the squad that he's got available and the end results. The squad that he's got available to finish in the top four in his first season was unbelievable from where we were. And we are in the top four again, and we've finished top of our Champions League group. So you can only judge him on the outcomes and what we're seeing. If you upgrade those the squad that we've got in the key positions that we all know, and I'm sure he's very aware of as well, and then we go backwards, fine. That's on him. But at this moment in time, he, as Dave said, he's an elite manager that has always done well when he's been backed and given quality players. This is the first club he's gone to where there wasn't probably a really strong foundation. You know, you've got Kane, you've got Son. There are some very, very good players in our squad, no doubt about it. But we all know there's business to be done. And so until he gets the chance to do that, then you can't really judge how successful he will be. So I just think, like me, if you don't like enjoy the football, just have to be patient. We have to give him more time, and you have to back this man, because of all the managers we've had, this guy's the one that's been there and done it. So he will give us the best chance of winning something and achieving something. So we've just got to back him and see where it goes.
And also,
there's still so much investment still to do in our squad. Like, we're at a bit of a new cycle. Like, everyone's losing their shit at the moment because Arsenal where they are and how they're playing and whatever. But we're a cycle behind them. Yeah, we've still got Kane and Son, and these are world class players. And Deki's come in, and Bentancourt, and we've made some good additions. You look at our back line. I mean, Conte, wherever he's been, wherever he's won titles, wherever he's won whatever, and been a world class manager, has had at least three or four top class wing backs. You could probably say we've got one, and he's 33, and even defensively, he's not great. And then you look at Romero's been out injured, you know, and that's a whole subject of its own. But then Sanchez comes in, and it's like that drop from Romero to Sanchez.
Significant.
Yeah, and what do you expect him to do? Like, how can you be like a no football and be like, what do you expect this man to do? Because that's what he's got to deal with, you know?
Well, the other thing is that, you know, last season and many the seasons that went before it, that Sonny was on fire. Conte's had to cope with not only prolonged absences of Kulusevski, but also Son, who's pretty much been non-existent since the turn of the season. So imagine, like, it's similar to Klopp, like, having to deal without Mane, but we don't have Luis Diaz to come in. And Son will come back to the fore and will do fantastic things for Tottenham, but he's had to cope with that players you expect to perform in Son and Kulusevski, you know, like coping without his existence in the side, that's something that it's difficult to legislate for. But Conte and all managers are expecting their best players to perform, and it's different from, like, Son has been there for many, many years, and it's not like Klopp with Darwin Núñez, who's new to the league. Different challenges, so you have to, you know, give him some leeway in having to legislate for the poor performance of players or the lack of them being available in our team. Mm-hmm. But what I would say is Sonny's fucking drip is insane. How good did he look? Like that Burberry, I actually had a little look online because I looked at it and I was like, I'd like that. I'm not sure I could carry it off. We had a question here actually from Jimmy, I can't read it, you've got mad font on your Twitter name. How many of the current squad could pull off Sonny's look from the Leeds game? I think I could see Eric Dier in it. He could carry that off.
Yeah. Romero? I could see Romero and something like that.
Nah, Romero is very much like Speedos and like a Diodora tracksuit kind of.
Yeah, vibe. A bit of, like, David Gandy. Like, yeah, okay, I've got that.
Bad vibes, yeah. And those big oversized glasses from 2010, he still wears them.
I thought Son looked sensational. He looked all a bit of a world-class athlete.
Like, how much was the jacket worth?
£1,090.
Yeah,
so he's an ambassador for Burberry, so he's getting all that fucking garms all up in his grill. But I looked at it, I was like, I'd fucking love that jacket. But you'd look like no normal man can wear that out without looking like.
Imagine walking down Tottenham High Road after a Champions League midweek game.
You look like a right cunt. Nah,
you would look like the biggest cunt going, waiting for the 1-2-3. Piss off.
But you look the boss.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
Also, right. if I had it, it'd just be people would just be asking me, oh, where are you going for a picnic, mate? Because it just looked fucking massive, wouldn't it? It just looked like a massive.
So if you laid that, if you had that jacket and you laid it down on the floor, how many people could eat off that picnic?
Oh, like a family of five. Quite
what are you talking about? There'll be a 20. That would be a bus outing for old ladies.
people getting married underneath it.
You get 20 plus, 70 plus old ladies dining out on your jacket, 100%.
Yeah, wiping their greasy hands on the sides as well.
Yeah. This is a bit of a weird one. Andy Dixon said, and I don't know where this come from. Did Sonny nick the cardigan whilst he was out, whilst he was round sorting out your mum, Flav? Where did that come from? Like, why?
She could never afford that jacket, to be fair.
Really? I mean, answer the question.
My mum can't afford that jacket, and so that's the issue. The fact that my mum can't afford the jacket that's the problem, not the fact that this geezer out of nowhere, Andy Dixon's come out and went, yeah, he was out. He was banging your mum, and that's why he got the jacket.
It says a lot about you, Flav, that you're more annoyed that I made a joke about your mum not being able to afford
furious.
It.
Furious.
You've not denied it. His son banging your mum. Does Andy Dixon know something?
Hey, I wish. Yeah. I wish. Imagine
you call him daddy.
Yeah, of course. They call him whatever he wants, mate. Whatever he wants. But I just love the brass tacks on Andy Dixon from nowhere. Just went, yeah, he's fucking your mum, mate.
I like it.
We've got another from Aphex Triplets. Says, would Alex from Bristol pull off Sonny look off? No chance.
I would love to see him try. I think we all would. Imagine him with the glasses, everything, a wig. It'd be incredible.
You have to operate on another level of society to wear that jacket. I just thought he looked mustard. But before the game even started, when Conte sort of greeted him, do you not think it was fantastic the fact that he was there on the touchline? Like, Romero weren't there, but Heung-min Son was. They're both going to the World Cup, Actually, on that, Romero, he tweeted a picture of himself on the pitch. I'm not sure if it was over the last couple of days, but he tweeted a picture of himself saying "Vamos Argentina" or all that, some of that bullets. There were some Spurs fans that decided to directly reply to that, saying you need to show more respect to Tottenham. That's not acceptable. John, what's your take on that?
I'm a bit torn here because I'm quite a patriotic person, and I don't have a problem with people. I don't have a problem with people who love their country, and I personally think, well, yeah, he obviously just prefers his country to his club that he's been at for less than a year or how long he's been here. Like, I don't think it's actually that big a thing. We all get fucking well leery because we think all the players love the club or should love the club as much as we do.
We'll boo them off if they're shit, though. If they're good, we'll show them all the loyalty on the planet and expect it back. When Emerson Royale is playing poorly, we'll fucking boo him off the pitch. We'll make his life a fucking misery. But if he's good, then don't fucking mug us off if you're choosing Brazil over us. Like, why should Romero choose Tottenham over his motherland? If he was shit, we'd be booing him off at the weekend. So don't.
I couldn't work out why so many people are getting so annoyed at it. I was looking at it like, and it's just a picture as well. Like, you can't tell. This guy could just have done a John Terry and just got in kit just to be with the lads, you know, get a selfie with Messi or whatever. I don't know, but it's just him walking pitch side. He could be doing some light training, and listen, if he's touch and go, little hammy pulled, whatever the injury was, I don't blame him. I don't blame him putting himself into the last couple of rounds of Premier League football, which has been like full on, isn't it? Really, if you think about it, the way we've been playing up and down the pitch,
there's no fucking there's no conspiracy. He's not feigning injury to not play for Spurs so he can go to the World Cup. That isn't happening. Do you think Conte is going to go? Oh yeah, no, I understand. I get it. You're pretending not to be fit, so you can't play for me. Do you think Conte would stand for that? It just so happens that he might be fit for Argentina's opening game, but he wasn't fit to play last weekend. That might just be the fact. Don't lose your shit over it.
People are acting like he's like put a picture of him doing like a Superman marathon, like he's doing a triathlon or something like that. Like, what can you do a triathlon for us on the weekend? You know, like he's just in Argentina kit next to a football pitch.
He's volley,
like,
a volleying,
calm down.
Like he's fucking volleying rabbits. Like, he's just doing a light jog, right? He might be fit for their opening game, but he's like, there is no chance that a club the size of Tottenham has a player under their contract that. They're not literally on a daily basis checking his fitness if he can play for our club, given the fact he's on like 150, 20, 200 grand a week. And he just decides that he's going to say, I'm not fit. Do you think that would fly? Mm. It wouldn't fly. Just fuck. It's not a real thing. Like he's not disrespecting us, for fuck's sake. Like,
yeah. Think about it though as well. Like if you're like any of us doing your normal job, right? Slightly different for yourself, actually for both of you, but let's say for me, right, working for a company, they pay my wages, right, which is essentially what Spurs do for Romero. If I don't know, I got the call from Southgate, he's like, look, El Gigante, I didn't pick Tony in the squad, I need a big target man to play for England, but can you have a week off sick, I don't want you to get injured, I'd fucking have a week off sick, I won't think twice about it, because I don't have that much loyalty to my company as I do to my country. So we all get caught up with it because we have more loyalty to Spurs than we probably do to England. Because that's just the weird thing about football, that you just have that. You prefer your club to the country. A lot of players don't, and I think that's just all right. And like, I'm not saying he's feigning injury, but could he have played at the weekend? Yeah, probably could have. But do I blame him for going, I just don't really want to risk it? I don't really blame him.
I don't even believe that was the conversation. I just don't. I think the medical staff probably worked out when he was going to return. It just so happens that it's in time for the World Cup. Like, if that isn't the case, what are you gaining from attacking him? Like, he's the best central defender we have by a country mile. Like, just like get him back after the World Cup. Everything's going to be fine. Could you think that he's concocted some sort of conspiracy to ensure that he plays for Argentina in the World Cup and didn't want to play in the league for us? Do you not think he would have preferred being match fit going into the World Cup? Of course he would. It's not It's not that deep, for fuck's sake. Everyone just
yeah, it's a nothing story, really.
Yeah, it really is. We were going to go into... we had a question, a couple of questions from a guy on Twitter asking why we bum off Levy all the time. I don't think we do, but we'll come onto it on a later episode, because whether we do or do not bum off Levy, that is a conversation that needs to be put on air. But to finish the podcast off, we've got a question from Callum, and he says, pound for pound, who has been better in a Spurs shirt, Sessegnon or Reguilón, Dave?
I saw this on the running order, and it kind of piqued my interest, because it's a good question, and it's not a good question mainly for like the positive things, but I'm going to go with Reguilón, because when we signed him, it felt like, oh, okay. You know, it was that time where we were like blowing teams away very briefly under Mourinho, and was like, we've got a player here, because he's just fucking quick and he was bombing down. I was genuinely really excited by him. Now, I don't hate Sessegnon, I'm not saying that, but he's never given me a semi. You know, and I'm just going by, like, when we first got him and he would just bomb into space and occasionally put a good, I think, especially when he first came in, he'd deceivingly put good balls in.
With his right foot.
There was one, with both feet sometimes. And I was like, what a player. And then it just turns out they were all fluky balls. It just went, he just put them into an area. They went into the right area. And he wasn't that good. But it was that initial kind of, oh, we've got one here. That's why I'm saying him.
And he came from Real Madrid. If Sessegnon was signed from fucking Barcelona, then we'd... Actually, that's not true, because Emerson Royal.
But we were excited by Royal, weren't we, when he came from Barcelona.
What's your take on Cal's question?
When I first saw it pop up on my timeline today, I just thought, oh yeah, Reguilón, because Sess is not that great, and I was hyped for Reguilón, same as what they've said. But actually, on reflection now, I would pick Sessegnon as being better, and the reason being is because Reguilón actually didn't do anything for us. He was crap. He was actually crap, and I think the reason that I particularly hate him so much now is because of the promise, and because of you know, there were I won't name names, but there were certain prominent people in Twitter land and podcasting land who were saying that after five games that he's better than Danny Rose. Now
that's quite specific. They're going to know who you're talking about.
Good. So it happened exactly the same with Romero. In fact, the same people saying Romero is better than Nedley King. After he played about 10 games for us.
You mean...
I said
Steve Corker was better than Lee King, but we'll forget that ever happened.
So my point is, people need to fucking calm down and wait till players play more games before they say they're either shit or good. So that all that being said, Sessegnon, because he's played more games and he's actually done all right in a few of those games, whereas I think Reguilón was pretty shit the whole time. Yeah. We were pretty excited because he was rapid, but he was crap.
He was crap, especially in the final third, actually. Like, how many sitters did Reguilón miss?
Yeah,
sitters. And at least Sess, usually, you know, he's got a decent shot on him. He gets the ball on target at least so many times. But it was just, I think knee-jerk reaction. I fell for the hype at first. And listen, I knew he wasn't that good after. I remember seeing a Twitter page, quite a big Spurs Twitter page, say that he was the best left-back in the league.
A lot of indirects here.
After like fuming.
And it was like one of the sport bibles or something like that was like, who's the best left-back in the league? So-and-so or so-and-so. And then this big Spurs Twitter replied a picture of Reguilón, and it wasn't like sarcasm. It was, and I was like, fuck off, mate. Like, he's played like four games. Like...
Oh, can't bear it.
Then again, I said Wilson Palacios was the best player in the world when he had that debut against Arsenal. So.
It was quality.
I thought Janssen was going to be the real deal. Big man who could hold it up. He was a man after my own heart. I thought, yes. And I'm going to go early so that I can say I really saw it coming. And yeah, he was fucking rubbish.
He's going to the World Cup.
He is.
He's going to the World Cup.
There you go.
And yeah. I thought Harry Kane was a pile of shit when I saw him as a youth player. So none of us know anything at all.
I remember being at White.
Don't go early. Just don't go early. That's the way to
go early. What? Who cares? Just fucking.
I was in the old Paxton. Maybe, I don't know, however many years ago, me and my mate was having one of those shitty warm Carlsbergs before the kickoff. We saw some kids with Kane on the back, and we were like, fucking hell. I hope that's his like little cousin or something like that. Like there was no world where it was like, what are those kids doing? They've got to be related. They have to be related. They, you know, it was around the same time as the chill I got this meme.
Yeah, there you go.
And yeah, funny man. Just
well,
we know nothing.
We know nothing at all. Never believe in it. Don't let any podcast or anyone who writes a blog or anyone who's got a fucking TikTok account let you think that we know a single fucking thing at all. We don't. We know nothing at all. We just say some shit into a microphone and hope that someone finds it entertaining. Remember, the most important thing you can take away from this is that we've got Christmas jumpers on sale. thefightingcock.co.uk/shop. Get involved. Boys, thank you so much. Dave, have you got any gigs in London or in the UK that people can come and catch you at?
I'm at the Comedy Station in Blackpool on the 25th, 26th, if anyone's in Blackpool. Yeah. My diary is so sparse because I was meant to be in Asia right now and it got cancelled. So,
yeah, why did it get cancelled?
Because the promoter died in a car accident. So,
why are you laughing?
Because you know why it got cancelled, because we went through this before you started recording, so you know what you've done there by making me answer it. That's why I'm laughing. Well,
this is comedy, but, it's comedy, yeah.
I'm at Top Secret quite a lot. Just follow me on Twitter, David Alfie Ward, or Instagram, and I post where I'm gigging. I've got a lot up north. I'm in Runcorn. I don't know. I'm up north a lot.
Fuck. So. Are you gigging in Runcorn? Runcorn's like the worst place.
I'm in Leicester. I'm Runcorn like 9th of December. The 3rd of December.
What's the comedy circuit in Runcorn like?
It's me and Carl Donnelly on the same bill that night.
Fuck. Carl Donnelly and you on the same board in Runcorn.
Yeah, Runcorn, yeah.
Mate, Runcorn is where the soul goes to die.
There you go, I've never been. I'm looking forward to
it. Have you not been? Nah. You're going to love
would
it. I? Indeed.
So, come and see me and Carl Donnelly in Runcorn, little way there.
Superb. And John Bass, you're just massive.
Yeah, that's you don't have to look me up. You can just see me at all times. Just look out your window. I'm there now.
Also, quickly before we go, me and a friend of mine, James Regal, is a friend of the podcast, have a Jimmy business Regal. Together. Jimmy Regal. We have a business together where we take shows. Me and Carl did it. You remember me and Carl did it for the Amsterdam show?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what you did?
Me and James
Man City and
business together.
Sporting.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
Right. So we're going to do Milan for AC. We're going to do a show for Tottenham fans in the day. Hopefully, we'll do a comedy show and we're hoping to get an ex-player for a Q&A. And it's called Under the Lights. So just follow me on David Alfie Ward or Barcelona Spurs for James. We'll post about it and we'd hopefully I'll come back on before and
100%.
We'll promote it and get tickets out. But just look out for that. It's called Under the Lights and we're hoping to make it a good business of just entertaining Spurs fans when they travel. Abroad.
Nice one. Yeah, definitely. Dave, we'll do it again before. Imagine going over to Milan and just a massacre, like just tearing their city to shreds, like raising the entire fucking infrastructure of Milan to the ground because Tottenham Hotspur turned up to play, and there's at the very top of the ashes is David Alfie Ward and Jimmy Regal doing comedy.
Doing some dick jokes.
Dick jokes. Yeah. Yeah, we've conquered Milan, but dick jokes.
Always.
Anyway, boys, cheers.
Cheers, man. Peace. Thanks.
Nice.
Network.